The First Thing is First Thing with Mike Parsons and Renee Vitale on 760 WJR and on the WJR app, where Michigan comes to talk.
Well, as expected, the story of Vance Boatler, the suspect arrested in the fatal shooting of one Democratic lawmaker in Minnesota and the injury of another one, has become more twisted and more dark as we find out more details closer to home here. Of course, you remember that manifesto and that list of names that he had. Yeah,
there was like 70 of them on there.
Yeah, it was I guess it was a hit list, for lack of a better word. And yeah, those 70 names, there was a number of Michigan representatives.
Yeah, and that included Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin, U.S. Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Shree Thandar, Hillary Scholten of Grand Rapids, and Debbie Dingell all on that list.
Yeah, Haley Stevens was also on
Haley
that list.
Stevens, right?
State Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are more as this investigation continues. And on top of that, of course, you know, he went to the home of State Rep Melissa Horton, killing her. He went to the home of State Senator John Hoffman, injuring him and his wife. They are expected to survive. But there are a couple of other people who, luckily, under different circumstances, might have been victims as well. Boatler went to two other people's homes before going to Hortman and Hoffman's.
Yeah, and here's one of those situations where I know not everybody believes this, but I am a thorough believer. Everything happens for a reason. Though we have a case here where he went to one lawmaker's home. They were not home.
Right.
Thankfully. And then he left another house that he went to after police arrived. So, I mean, this story could be so much different if those people weren't out running an errand or whatever they had happened to be doing that night.
Right. At 2:38 a.m. Right. Either way, they were lucky that they weren't home.
Right.
Now, my question is, the second house, this Boatler guy was scared off because, like you said, there were police at the home. They were doing a welfare check. Mm-hmm. You know, what were the police doing a welfare check for that late at night? Because this all kind of took place between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. early Saturday morning.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, is it because they at that point had found the list of names and so they were checking? I don't know. Like, there's still a lot of details that are kind of murky.
Yeah, I mean, was there a tip off and they were going to everyone's home, who was on this list? Because outside, I think it was outside Hortman's home, that's where they got into a shootout with this guy.
I believe you're right.
Yeah. So there's still a lot of pieces of the puzzle that's not quite connecting. But as we said, as we find out more about this, there's more disturbing details the more we kind of go down this rabbit hole.
You know, and another disturbing detail, the Hortman's children, you know, after everything that they had endured, then they had to put their dog down because he was injured in the shooting.
Right. And then I believe was it State Senator Hoffman's wife or was it Melissa Hortman? They were actually shot protecting one of their kids as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So just tragedy on top of tragedy. This Boatler fella, he was charged with federal murder, stalking offenses. He already faces state charges. He may face the death penalty in federal charges. So
good.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one who's going to oppose that.
Right.
I mean, especially when it comes to elected officials and the high profile nature of the case. All right. So last night, and Renee, I know that you were not able to watch the mayoral debate. So there's something I want to run by you and get your actual real time reaction to it. So
I'm intrigued.
The four participants, I believe, from what I saw today on Local 4, I think WDIV, they conducted their own polling. Anyone who got a 6% in the polls or more, they were invited to participate in this debate. So that left four participants: City Council President Mary Sheffield, former Police Chief James Craig, Pastor Solomon Kinlock, and former Detroit City Councilwoman and former CEO of the Heat and Warmth Fund, Sawntill Jenkins. And I thought they all represented themselves well. They all had really good ideas. They seemed to know what they were talking about. Things stayed relatively polite. There wasn't a whole lot of interrupting. There wasn't bunch of back and forth. Until the very end, Sawntill Jenkins, she doled out stone-cold stunners in her closing statements.
Oh, my.
She said, if you want a future that includes more guns in schools and locking up our kids, James Craig is your guy. If you want a part-time mayor who's working full-time jobs, Kinlock is ready. If you want a mayor who shows up on Instagram but doesn't show up for meetings, then follow Mary.
Whoa!
Let me talk to you!
Jeez. Wait, was there audible gasps?
There was, actually. Because here's the thing. I remember watching this, and you know, the Free Press picked up some subtle digs here and there, by their reporters who are a little more in tune. But overall, I was watching. I was like, this is a very civil debate. People are talking.
How refreshing.
Right. The only time the other candidates were mentioned were like, to so-and-so's point, I agree that we need to la la la. So it was very jarring at the end to finally see someone take shots at other opponents. Where, look, we watch these presidential debates and it's barb after barb, so you become desensitized to it.
Right.
This one, you're lulled into a kind of a sense of security, like, oh, what a nice, civil, substantial debate. And then, boom, Craig's going to lock up your kids. Kinlock's got too many
kids,
dang
hide
jobs.
Your wife.
Mary Sheffield's a vapid influencer.
So, I wonder if that's going to, if that helped or hurt her.
I don't know. Because here's the thing, Mary Sheffield is so far out ahead of the field that I feel like maybe Sawntill Jenkins felt like she had to do something, but I was wondering the same thing. I wonder if this is going to give her a little bump or it's going to detract a little bit, because it was so unexpected after an hour of you know, very, very civil debate.
And, wow.
And everybody kind of...
I'm sorry, I missed that.
You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
But there was an audible gasp. I was even kind of surprised because I was sort of zoning out a little bit. It was the closing statements, and then after James Craig was the next person to give his closing statements.
Yeah, what did he follow it up with?
He goes, "Oh, the gloves are off." And then I think he said, "Let's party."
Let's party.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, James Craig was actually very interesting to me because I think he tanked his mayoral campaign back when he was running for governor, because, you know, he aligned himself with Trump and he ran as a Republican, and he's technically running as a Republican. But I got to say, last night, you know, James Craig, he went back to being the chief. And when James Craig was chief, he was very competent. He was very direct and he was very credible in his speaking. And he was the former deputy mayor under Mayor Duggan. I think he might actually be the most on the job ready first day, but it's not going to happen because, you know, he aligned himself as a Republican. But he didn't mention Trump once. He said he was a conservative, but he tied himself to Duggan.
I think that was smart, don't you?
I think so too. And a couple of the other right. Well, and a couple of the other candidates, they tried to tie themselves to Duggan as well, which was very interesting because obviously Duggan probably could have been mayor for life if he didn't want to run for governor.
Right.
But yeah, James Craig, you know, he mentioned a lot of things that him and Mayor Duggan did together. Didn't mention Trump once. All right, got to take a quick break. It's First Thing, Mike Parsons, Renee Vitale, WJR. And we are heading into JR Morning with Chris, Lloyd, and Jamie. And anyone in this room thinking of switching to Trump Mobile?
Trump Mobile.
No.
Have you heard about this?
I haven't given much consideration to this. I'm happy with my current provider.
It feels like I'm calling Chris during dinner. No, thank you. I'm happy with my current provider.
You're a guy who shows up at my door hawking windows. I'm good, thank you.
Yeah.
I noticed that you might need some shingle work on your roof.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Your neighbors have hired me down the street.
Yes. Right?
We're doing a lot of work in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or, you know, when you're at the warehouse club and, you know, you walk past, what
cell phone
carrier
provider
are you on?
Yeah. Which
which carrier are you advertising? I'm AT&T. That's the one I'm on.
Yeah,
I'm on that one. Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, I have reassessed my shopping routes at Target because I don't want. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like I know you're trying to make a living, but I'm just trying to pick up some printer ink.
Let me talk to you.
So, yeah, the Trump Organization's launching a cellular phone service called T1 Mobile. That will cost $47.45 a month.
Oh, I see what
Trump
they did there.
Yeah, it's the 47th and 45th, including unlimited calls and texts and data, which, look, that's a pretty good deal. But I don't know if I want to walk around with the golden phone that says Make America Great Again.
Well, how come it can't be 45.47?
That's what I was thinking.
You know,
that's
right. Why it's got to be 47.45?
Right.
Note to self, take Lloyd with me next time I'm buying a new car.
All right.
I mean, here's the thing. If it's a good product, people will use it. But like I said, the gold phone is kind of like what the Tesla Cybertruck was back when Elon Musk was first buddy. It's kind of something that tips your hand on where you stand politically. And some people like that. Some people are loud and proud about that. Other people would rather just keep that to themselves.
Who's buying this, though?
Oh, there's a market.
Who's buying it?
The same people that bought the shoes,
the Bible,
the guitars,
the watch,
the Bibles,
the stuffed animals.
Well, maybe not the watch. The watch was like $100,000.
Yeah. Yeah, but you got
and it was
you
a
know,
fail.
There's some of those though too that bought them. You know, the watches.
Yeah,
I mean, if you could take your phone and bring your number and your own phone over, it's not a bad deal. I just don't want the gold phone either. I mean,
you get
free texts and calls, unlimited data, free roadside assistance, telehealth service. That'll allow
Tell
you to get
more.
Prescriptions. But wait, there's more. I mean, it doesn't sound like a bad deal.
Yeah, it also doesn't sound completely legal. I mean, I know that Don Jr. is running it, but I mean, look, it's President Trump branded cell phone service. It's a little gray area. Not that it matters because the Supreme Court has pretty much deemed Donald Trump above the law, but it's like, you really can't do this, but you're doing it anyway.
Right. Just blatant out in the open.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to try and profit off this presidency.
Right. Even Jimmy Carter had to give up the peanut farm while he was in office. So we'll see how this goes. But yeah, I think Jamie's right. Chris is right. There's not a huge market for it, but Jamie is right. There is a market because there's a lot of people who buy, you know, the red hats and the branded merchandise
sure.
and all that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how well it will do, but people will switch to it. Anybody catch the mayoral debate last night?
I did. I watched.
And what was to you? What was the biggest moment of that debate?
Well, to me, it was some disappointment at the end when Santel Jenkins went after everybody at the end. I didn't see that coming, and I didn't think, you know, that she would do something like that. That she didn't need to say that.
Well, and that's what we were saying earlier. Did that help or hurt her, do you think?
Yeah, I think that hurt. I think that hurt her because a lot of people, too, you know, on social media was like, I don't think she should have done that. And they were surprised.
It was such a civil debate up until that moment. It was just the issues.
Yes.
There wasn't a whole lot of back and forth, which made, you know, her throwing out those insults even more jarring.
Because, it did.
Yeah.
Yep. And I thought Jason Coulthard did a great job at moderating as well. Just so throw that out there.
I think so, too. And I would like more debates to be like that
yes.
as well. JR Morning coming up. Vance Boatler, the suspect arrested in the fatal shooting of a Democratic lawmaker in Minnesota, had a list of names in one of his vehicles, which included a number of officials here from Michigan. A source with knowledge of the situation told the Detroit Free Press that some Democratic members of Michigan's congressional delegation were on the list, including Congresswoman Haley Stevens, Rashida Tlaib, Hillary Shulton, Debbie Dingell, Congressman Sri Thanadar, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, Senator Alyssa Slotkin, and State Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, and there may be more names added to that list. Now, Boatler went to the home of two other Minnesota lawmakers before killing State Rep Melissa Hortman and injuring State Senator John Hoffman. The first person wasn't home, and Boatler was scared off from the second location because police were patrolling the area. The names of those lawmakers have not been released. 57-year-old Boatler was charged with federal murder, stalking offenses. He already faces state charges, including murder and attempted murder, and he may face the death penalty. And there were a number of developments in this confrontation between Iran and Iraq, both overseas and here at home.
Yeah, Israel and Iran are training strikes on a fifth day of conflict with civilians in flashpoint areas facing waves of attacks in Iran. At least 224 people have been killed since hostilities began in Israel. 24 people have been killed. President Trump, he left the G7 summit early to rush back to Washington after directing his team to attempt a meeting with Iranian officials as quickly as possible. Trump denied that he left to work on a ceasefire and said something much bigger is in the works. He also warned Iranians to evacuate Tehran, underscoring the danger to its 10 million residents. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that he believes Israel's strikes has significantly set back Iran's nuclear program, saying, "I estimate that we are sending them back a very, very long time." Israel targeted three key Iranian nuclear facilities and scientists, with the extent of the damage still unclear.
Yeah, and I mean, evacuating Tehran, like you said, 10 million people inside the city. I think I saw 16 million in the metropolitan area.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that, trying to evacuate.
No small feat.
New York City, essentially, right. Here, yeah. In the New York City market. So, yeah, and when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God, what are we going to wake up to? I don't want to say nothing huge happened, because this in itself is huge. Right. But I think when you see that, your imagination runs away with you, and it jumps to the worst possible conclusion.
Right. The capabilities are
right. President Trump told reporters at the G7 that Iran would like to make a deal. So we'll keep an eye on that. Former Michigan House Speaker Tom Leonard, he will announce his candidacy for governor later on this morning. Leonard, he's a Republican. He's currently a partner at Plunkett Cooney. He's only 44. He was very young when he was leading the state house from 2017 to 2019. He did run for attorney general against Dana Nessel in 2018. I have to say, he's a frequent guest on Focus with Paul W. Smith. Real nice guy. Gives great legal analysis. And we'll see how he does in this already crowded pool of gubernatorial candidates. Meanwhile, a terrible, terrible tragedy out in Harrison Township.
Yeah, just awful. A toddler has died after he was found in the Clinton River on Monday. Yesterday at 11 a.m., deputies responded to a call about a missing child. The toddler had been last seen at his home on Mance Street in Harrison Township about 11:30 a.m. Then the boy was found in the Clinton River about 50 feet from his home. Deputies administered life-saving measures, and he was rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. Authorities said that the water was roughly 5 feet deep where he was found, and the investigation is ongoing.
Yeah, the fact that it was 5 feet of water is so tragic.
Yeah, he was only two, so, you know, that was quite deep for him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're 2 years old, you're shorter than 5 feet, but it just goes to show that even a relatively shallow body of water could be dangerous.
Yeah.
The suspect who shot two Minnesota lawmakers, killing one, was dressed like a police officer. Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard talks to Paul W. Smith about how to make sure the police are who they say they are, as well as a member of a transnational gang breaking into high-end homes facing sentencing here in Metro Detroit.
Always a pleasure welcoming a gentleman who has served in both the State House and Senate and served people for as long as I've known him. He is Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard. And unfortunately, we have a lot to talk about today. Sheriff, nice to have you with us. I hope you're well. I hope you had a nice Father's Day.
Yeah, as good as I can. You know, obviously, my one son deployed in the Middle East in the midst of all the stuff. And
that's tough.
My daughter lives elsewhere, but it's still a nice day. Got to talk to them all and got to spend time with one of the remaining children that were home. So that was great.
Well, good for you. Got to ask you a couple of things. First of all, some good news from some of your hard work. This Chilean national convicted for his role in a series of home invasions that targeted our area and other parts of the country. He was sentenced to 10 to 20 years in prison, according to Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel.
Yes, 10 to 20 on the continuing enterprise, and then three counts that are also in addition to that for the burglaries and other kinds of things. So a significant sentence. We thank Judge Rowe for handing down an appropriate sentence and Attorney General Nessel for her team that prosecuted this case for us. And, you know, we hope and believe it sends a very strong message to these transnational gangs. You come to Oakland County, we're not going to leave any stone unturned, and we're going to hold you accountable.
Yeah, and this is our first big success, isn't it?
Well, we've had some others that have pled guilty on less charges, some of the Colombians and other folks. But this was some of the ones that were kind of kicking off the real pattern that we saw when I started the task force to attack this. And, you know, they have not wanted to plead or, you know, to take these charges lightly because, again, they were charged with some of the more heavy charges in the whole country. Thanks to the partnership we have with other law enforcement and the Attorney General's office. So it was the first of its kind, and that's why I think it's going to send a very big message. There's two still pending from that same case that now see this as the pathway.
Ah, well, good for you, and it's certainly move in the right direction because these people have been moving about our communities and stealing and getting away with it. Now we're starting to capture them, and that's all certainly good news. We'll stay on top of that with you, Sheriff Michael Bouchard. Now the other story, which made a tough weekend all the way around, the man who shot the Minnesota lawmakers apparently was posing as a police officer, and it's getting, we were talking earlier, I was with my producer, Mike Parsons, that you know, we get all this stuff now on computers. Heck, even on the highway, I saw a couple of times they said, those toll requests or saying you're behind on your tolls or whatever are fake because we don't have tolls in Michigan. But now they're doing this stuff. They're coming into our homes. They're coming to our doors. And they're coming in uniforms. And the question here is, I'm supposed to ask, what can people do to verify law enforcement officers are who they say they are? The fact of the matter is, you really shouldn't open your door to anybody anymore. That's the sad part. But
yeah,
then I noticed,
I
noticed, though, Michael, the bullet holes went through the door. They hadn't opened their door, at least the outer door. Did you see that?
And that's what I was going to say. First, you shouldn't open your door until you know who's on the other side of it. It's just not, you know, people in this situation trying to pretend to be a police officer. I mean, you saw the tragedy that we had in Rochester Hills with the fake utility worker.
Right.
Who got in the home under that guise and ended up killing a man there. So you shouldn't open your door, number one, to anybody unless you have verified who they are and what they're doing there. So, you know, that means calling whoever they're purporting to represent and asking if they have people at your home. Secondarily, don't stand in front of your door. I mean, this is a tactic we have learned hard in law enforcement and the military. You don't stand in front of the door. So if you're going to talk to somebody through the door, don't stand in front of the door, number one. Number two, if you have some kind of electronics to talk to them with a Ring doorbell or other kind of, do it that way. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that we encourage. And then also have some kind of ability to make sure that door is not easily breachable if you're in for the night. And, you know, there are different devices you can put on the door that can make you a lot more secure in your home until the real cavalry gets there. So if you call the police from it, say, hey, do you have somebody here? And they say no, then you fall back to the safest place in your house and defend yourself if need be in that moment. But in the meantime, cavalry's coming, and those strong doors and locks help keep them out and give you time for the cavalry to get there.
That's interesting. So where do we look into these things that you say we can add to our door when we're in for the night and want to make sure it's reinforced?
Well, I mean, I actually tested some of these for different school districts, and the one that I ended up settling in on, both for my house, and you saw them used with great effect at the Oxford tragedy, they just kind of drop down into the door and connect it to the floor through a plate. You can buy those online. You can buy them on Amazon, but there's other kinds of things you can do too. You just want to make sure that door, which oftentimes is very easily to breach because most people have a very thin lock that goes into just really nothing that's heavily secured. So you're going to want some way to secure that door in a meaningful fashion.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. All right. Well, that's good news. There's something that you take away from this conversation. You don't know who's on the other side of the door. Don't stand in the doorway, even with the door closed. Stand off to the side, try to talk through your ring, whatever, and anybody can be checked on. Certainly the police. You call 911 and say, hey, we have somebody claiming to be the police. Do you have them down at coming to our house? But 100%. that goes for the for the workers that can come in, too, utility workers and such. You just, there's no hurry here, folks. And the only one in danger is you. So you got to look out for you and your family. Meanwhile.
Yep. And you actually saw a case years ago where there was a lawyer that was shot through the door of his home, I believe in Bloomfield a number of years ago. So, you know, getting in front of a door when somebody's on the outside that you don't know who they are or what they want isn't your best choice.
Former House Speaker and former Congressman, I'm sorry, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and former Congressman Dave Trott have seen their fair share of ugliness in politics before they left the House.
And Dave Trott's been filling in for Kevin Dietz on All Talk, and Kevin McCarthy checked in with him to discuss the current political landscape.
So the big, beautiful bill is in the Senate. A little unclear what's going to happen with that, but I thought we'd have join us this morning, former Speaker Kevin McCarthy, to talk about its prospects in Congress. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to hear you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mr. Speaker. I sure appreciate you calling in. And, you know, one of my favorite stories is when I was running for Congress in 2014, you came into Michigan and we did an event, and you gave a wonderful speech at Oakland Hills to all of my supporters. And then I gave my little talk, and we're driving home, and my wife looked at me and said, "You need to learn how to give a speech like Kevin McCarthy." I said, sweetie,
you did quite well. You didn't need to learn from me. I was always so impressed. You know, the thing I loved about you, Dave, is you were always focused on how did it affect the district and how did it affect the people back home, and I took just your expertise in business with your knowledge and commitment to all of Michigan. I always admired that greatly. But you want to talk a little bit about the big, beautiful bill?
Yeah. How's it going to play out in the Senate, do you think?
It's going to get done. And the timeline, what's going to drive it is behind it, you got to do the debt ceiling, and this is a part of it. The thing I think people confuse about this, because it's being done by what is called reconciliation, which means you don't need 60 votes in the Senate. You just need a simple majority. It's not like writing any other bill. You can't deal with discretionary spending. You can only deal with mandatory. It has the Byrd rule in there. So people get frustrated and say, why can't you do this? It doesn't do that. You're overthinking it. What this is really doing is, the concern with the way the tax bill was passed was this way, and so it only had a 10-year window for the things that were not paid for that would stay permanent. So if they did nothing, everybody's tax rate would go up. So what they're doing is locking that in so you don't raise taxes, while at the same time they're able to make some other changes while they're actually cutting back on some of the mandatory spending. They're going to do no tax on tips. They're going to do some no tax on someone's Social Security by age and income.
But they're going to lock in the current tax rate and make that permanent. And a lot of that's R&D, which you get from business, will spur, especially in a state like Michigan, where businesses would make that investment to keep them competitive for the world. But also it brings you stability. So it's not the bill that one person would sit back and write, and they don't quite understand that the rules around it limit what they can and cannot do. But it will bring stability. It will get done, I believe, in July. And then they'll be off to the races to do other things.
Right. And do you think the Trump administration has taken issue with the CBO and their scoring? And there's argument about, static versus dynamic scoring. And, President Trump believes that the cuts, making them permanent will spur growth at perhaps 4%. The CBO said 1.8%. How do you think that plays out? Because that obviously impacts the question on deficits.
Yeah, look, I think it's much more important to get this done. I think it's going to bring more growth. I've watched many times the CBO say one thing and the outcome be the other. But, if you look at the Fiscal Responsibility Act, when I was speaker and we had to deal with the debt ceiling, now that's discretionary, we were able to cut $2.2 trillion. Now, a lot of people wonder, you've got all the majority now, thinking maybe you could cut more, because I think this one does 1.6. This is the largest for mandatory. Ours was the largest in history, and we got work requirements and others. So when these Democrats argue like, you're doing something not – the Democrats voted for work requirements when it came to welfare. And what you found at that case, especially there, it helped people get jobs, improve their way of life. And the same thing here when the Democrats make that false attack on Medicaid. This is only for able body with no dependents. Okay, so you have to be very healthy. You have no children, no dependents. What it does is provides a work requirement. And what that's going to do is actually incentivize and help you in the places you may need to get a job to improve your life. And I just think in the long run, that's going to be so much better. And of course, that brings greater growth to the economy, and especially in the tax bill being permanent, the R&D in there. That's going to make a major difference. So I think the CBO definitely has it wrong.
Well, we can hope that that's the case, and we need that. Over the weekend, to switch topics here, we had a terrible tragedy with assassinations in Minnesota. And, you were on the baseball field, and I think you visited him every day when he was in the hospital 8 years ago. It was this weekend, 8 years ago this weekend, where Steve Scalise almost died at a practice for the congressional baseball game. And I think last year there were 9,000 threats against members of Congress. I never had a problem like that when I was in Congress. I had one woman that seemed to be stalking me in the grocery store. Every time I went to one particular grocery store, she'd find me in the produce section and start yelling at me. But that was my worst experience. What do we need to do about all the political violence that now seems to be directed towards our elected officials?
Just devastating what we saw. First of all, you look at these individuals, they have to be very sick individuals that carry this out. We watched something similar in the baseball where an individual had a list of names and went out and was shooting at Republicans playing baseball. Now we've watched an individual go and literally kill a former speaker at her house and her husband and shoot up a senator and others. What I think is happening in this world is just you take a step back, not from this shooting of it. We've got to start respecting other people's opinion to be different than yours. That doesn't mean anything's wrong with that person. That's what the First Amendment allows, to have that free debate, but we be respectful. Now we've taken it to a whole different level, and that rhetoric builds into a lot of this, what I find going out. But this individual has to be a very sick, sick person to be able to take somebody's life, knock on the door, to wear the mask. That, to me, is just horrendous. I'm very thankful to the first responders that were able to get him before he was able to even kill more, because you look at that long list that he had. In politics today, I know you didn't have experience like this, but I had an individual that was going after my son just because he didn't like my politics. And fortunately, they were able to catch him before, but he had mapped out his apartment where he was going to kill him across the street. And this person had already been in jail trying to kill the president
Bush. And so I think it's more on some of this is mental capacity, some of this is others, but man, it's just, this isn't what America is made of. We've got to be more respectful to one another, and we cannot allow this to continue.
You know, when you were speaker, you did exactly what you just preached, which is, you know, you were very positive, and I can't imagine being Speaker of the House of Representatives. I mean, it is a job that's more difficult than herding cats, because you have so many different agendas, and some just within your own caucus, and you so many different opinions, and you were always very positive, and it had to be a very difficult job trying to manage the Freedom Caucus and get them to look at the big picture. I marvel at how you did it. Do you look back at those days and kind of shake your head and perhaps happy you're in private practice now?
I felt blessed that every day I was to be able to be elected. I mean, it is really an unbelievable job. And, you know, only a few people get the opportunity to be able to have the chance. We work with people, and it's just like in the world of life, no matter where you are, there's good people and there's bad people. I mean, there's people that try to be helpful, the people that just do things for all the wrong reasons. I had one or two people that were like that, but yeah. I enjoyed every single day on the job.
It sure looked like you did. Well, thanks, Mr. Speaker, for joining us. I'll